Hey, it's Kathy. Before we get into today's episode, I have something so cool to tell you about. I'm kicking off a free training. It's a free 5-day abundance activation challenge. It starts on May 6th, and I'll be going live every day with you to give you the practical tools that you need to become a master manifestor and create more abundance in your life. If you're curious about manifesting and elevating your vibration to start attracting more abundance, if you want tools you can use to tap into the high vibe energy at the drop of a hat, or you're simply seeking truth and joy in life, this challenge is designed for you. I'll be covering the practices and tools to tune your vibration, claim your worth, and co-create with the universe. It's just going to be so much fun. This is the thing that I have been most excited to put together, and I have been working on this behind the scenes really for the last 2 years, and it's finally here. And if you wanted to just do a deep dive into all the spiritual and all the energetic tools that really you can use that are right here, that are within you, that will allow all these incredible gifts that are hidden in plain sight already to start being a part of your life. I'm so excited for this. We always have so much fun, but this is actually something I've been working on for over 2 years, and it's finally here. So save your spot now. You can sign up for free at kathyheller.com/5-day, and that's the number 5.
When you follow your longing with the choice, trust, and play, you will belong to yourself. You will feel like you've connected to your birthright, and you will feel like you are talking to the cosmos, like you are connected to every layer of the self.
Thanks to Shopify for supporting my podcast. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving entrepreneurs like myself the resources once reserved for big business. For a free 14-day trial and full access to Shopify's entire suite of features, go to shopify.com/dreamjob. Hey guys, it's Kathy Heller. Welcome back to the podcast. We have such a good episode for you today. Kelly Carlin is here. She's amazing. She has so much to offer, so much wisdom. She is doing such incredible things, helping people, helping women to really grow and to expand. She also happens to be the daughter of George Carlin, the very, very, very famous, iconic, legendary comedian. We are going to have such an incredible conversation. You're going to really enjoy this. So I'm excited to dive in. Before we do, I just want to let you know that I'm going to be doing a big giveaway on my Instagram because I would like to give $1,000 to two amazing women to help support you and to help you grow your business, to grow your empire, to grow your dreams, to help you share your gifts with the world. Not only will two winners get $1,000 each, but you also get a gift card to Nordstrom. You also get a Women Can Do Anything t-shirt from Zadig and Voltaire, as well as a signed copy of my book. And you will get a gift card to use towards my retreat should you decide to go ahead and use that. And here's why. Because there's nothing more powerful than a collective of women who are connected and aligned. I believe that the way forward is radical support for one another, because together we are such a force for good. And this is why I like to say that playing small has got to be canceled. Mother Teresa said it takes a checkbook to change the world. So stop shrinking and being scared to raise your hand, go build your empire. And when you see a woman having the courage to put herself out there or make content or start a business or raise her prices or say what she thinks, praise her, support her, shine her crown, and thank her. Let's start to see clearly that there is a giant opportunity for women to step into leadership, and not just to be sweet and kind and beautiful, but also to be bold and fierce and strong. You can still be good, and you can still have grace, and you can also be a force to be reckoned with all at the same time. So if you head over to my Instagram, you're going to find this giveaway, but I think that it's just something extra I wanted to do this week, is to put more support into this community. So if you would like to do the giveaway, just go to my Instagram at kathy.heller and you'll see it. All I'm going to ask you to do is review this podcast, and I'm going to ask you to share one of my reels on your Instagram. Pretty simple. And you're going to be asked to tag a friend that you want to support as well. So that is all there is to it. I also wanted to say I am going to be in Malibu August 1st through the 3rd, hosting such a beautiful retreat. We already have such an incredible group of women coming. This retreat is going to be just a rocket ship, just an open door to you, but the best, most delicious you, the future self, the things you really want to see manifest and made come to life. You're going to feel about 1,000 tons lighter, and you're going to see just how fast you can change the frequency and receive such clarity. We are going to have a breathwork session, a sound bath. There is going to be tons of meditation, and we're really going to go through some pretty deep work to change your relationship with abundance so that you are fully attuned to allowing it in, because it's already done and it's already there. It's now just about releasing the blocks to the abundance in all areas so that the infinite amount of love and goodness and health and wealth all is just allowed to be received. If you want to join me in Malibu, you can go to kathyheller.com/retreat and grab your spot. It's going to be so beautiful. It's at a beautiful ranch. It's actually the same ranch where I got married. And it's really bougie and gorgeous, but also rustic. We'll have beautiful meals for you. We're going to have a party at the end. Everyone's going to wear their beautiful white linens or whatever you want to wear in white. It's going to be really classy and sexy and gorgeous. So if you want to be having the most expansive summer, find us, kathyheller.com/retreat. Can't wait to be with you there. All right. Well, you are in for a treat. Kelly Carlin is here. She's a writer. She's a producer, a radio host, a speaker, an author, a life coach. She's also an actress. Some of you might be familiar with her dad. As I was saying, maybe one of the most legendary comedians of all time, George Carlin. She's done so much. She's done a one-woman show, and she wrote a book called A Carlin Home Companion. Just to pull back the curtain on how it was to grow up with him and how she's been able to carve out her own identity, you can also now see the two-part documentary, George Carlin's American Dream. It's stunning. It really shows his rise to fame and opens an intimate window into his personal life, including his childhood, his struggle with drugs, his brushes with the law, his marriages with Kelly's amazing mom, Brenda, and his second wife, and a lot of the pieces that made him human. Kelly is one of the executive producers. It's directed by Judd Apatow and Michael Bonfiglio and my friend, my dear friend, Wayne Fetterman, who you probably heard on the podcast because he's been here twice. He was also a producer on the documentary. So it's definitely a dream team that put this together, and you can watch it on HBO Max. We talk a lot about the documentary and her dad's philosophy and the impact that had on her own beliefs, but we're also going to get into some of the phenomenal work that Kelly does as a coach to help people reconnect and align with their true self. She went to UCLA and studied Jungian psychology and has a lot of deep, deep understanding of the different Eastern philosophies, and I think that you're going to find it fascinating what she shares. There's just so much juicy mic drop advice that she gives about discovering who you are and how to give yourself permission to follow your joy and mend whatever toxic narrative you might have around money specifically. And considering that her father was a well-known anti-capitalist, you'd best believe that she had her own journey with that. It was such an honor and a delight to have her here. So I won't keep you waiting any longer. Without further ado, please welcome the extraordinary Kelly Carlin.
Kelly, I'm really just so happy to meet you. It's really like a bucket list moment. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. So excited to talk to you. I love what you're up to. I love the big conversation you're having in the world. So I'm all in. Let's do it.
Right before we officially started recording, I told you that my good friend, Wayne Fetterman, he was actually the first person we interviewed for this show. He was so generous. And then he came back again later on. And he adores you. And he just finished recently working on this beautiful project, a lot about your family and about your dad. And I think it's a good place to start because it came out recently. And it's a movie that I think really has so many layers that really open a lot of doors for people. And then from there, I think that leads us right into hearing a lot about you and how you see the world. So let's talk about this project. What was it like for you to make this movie about your family?
Well, you know, it's interesting because it's been 14 years since my dad died. And
I can't believe he's been gone for 14 years.
It's very weird. It's weird on so many different levels. And so a lot of people had approached us over the years, obviously. And my dad's manager is still alive. And he and I were really the protector and keeper of my dad's stuff. And so we were very picky, highly picky, because we knew we could be. And I'm very much an intuitive person. If it hits my body a certain way, I know if it's right or not. And nothing quite fit. It was like, oh, that element's interesting. Oh, that's interesting. Nothing quite fit. Then this gentleman named Teddy Leifer approached me about 4 years ago. UK producer, had just won the Oscar for a documentary called Icarus, like the real deal on every level. And like he and I just connected in conversations. And I thought, you know, I could trust this man with anything in my life. And then the timing wasn't right for us. We were kind of working on getting another project greenlit, and that didn't happen. And then we jumped in. We jumped in late 2019 and got to interview a bunch of amazing documentary directors. And then we talked to Judd Apatow, and it was like, check, 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 check. A comedian, had done Gary Shandling's documentary. Gary was my mentor. So I knew what that documentary had revealed and how raw and real and beautiful it was. And the message that Gary wanted to get out his whole life was in it. And I knew Judd just had a really high EQ. And that was important to me. I needed a good storyteller, but someone with a big heart who also understood comedy. So it was incredible. And I said to them, go do. I don't want to be in charge of a narrative. I don't want to be approving things. I gave them some notes. I obviously steered them, and we gave them access to everything. And I just said to them, I just don't want it to be a cavalcade of talking heads, talking like how great my dad is. Like, that's the most boring thing ever.
It is boring.
And it's so boring. And there's there's a lot of docs out like that. And it's easy because comedians will talk about anything for hours, as you know. But I said, I also want to learn something about my dad. I'd already worked on a solo show and a memoir called A Carlin Home Companion. And I'd already worked my narrative and kind of worked my dad's narrative and my family's narrative a lot. I've been in and out of therapy most of my life. So I kind of was like, you know, I know there's some rocks unturned around here, you know? So, and they did an amazing job of it. And really the most I've been involved in it day to day is since it's come out, really, to talk about it and to be the face of it out there. But I'm just so, so proud of what they did.
Yeah.
I think they did an incredible job, way, way above and beyond my expectations.
Yeah. It almost brings me to tears because, and I'm sure people watching felt that way, because there's so many people who are famous. There's so many icons, and your dad is absolutely an icon, but he wasn't famous because he's famous. He had so much to say in this world. It like literally brings me to tears. And the layers to him and the heartbreaking idealist who had to come to terms with the way the world actually can be.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful and poetic. And oh my gosh, I can't imagine what he would think if he was here today, seeing the way people get canceled for things that they say. It's just so layered and fascinating. I feel like everyone needs to watch this movie right now. Not because there's no one who's not a George Carlin fan, but it's not that. It's the layers of his humanity and how unrelenting he was to speak it out loud, and the pain it caused him to see division in people.
Yeah.
And how he was willing to risk everything to say things that were true. It's just like, we need that now so badly. And so I really think that this movie is like medicine. And I agree with you that because the Zen Diaries of Gary Shandling was so gorgeous. And it's interesting that they chose to do both of these biopics, because both of these men, Gary Shandling and your dad, there's a similar nature to where there's so much depth in this person. Just because he makes you laugh, it's like he goes as far the other way, right? And what is it like for you? Because I've read some about you and I got to know a little bit about you in the movie. And, you know, you've been on this journey as a seeker, like, why are we here? And looking at Buddhism and looking at, you know, what's the reason? What's the existential, you know, and how could you not be in such inquiry having parents like you had?
Totally.
But how have you come through this journey? And what do you think it is about your upbringing that both shaped you and also was sort of like contrast for you that helped you come out with what it is that you kind of think about today in terms of like how you're living your life?
Yeah. You know, I think, I mean, I've had my main journey and what I wrote my memoir about was really this thing where I didn't get to live my truth because we lived in an addiction family. And a lot of people can relate to that story. And I think that's overall, at least I feel, is the biggest struggle we all have living in a capitalistic modern culture, is what is our deepest truth versus how the world needs us to be in order to function and survive and succeed and things like that. And so a lot of my journey has been about, you know, when you have a father like George Carlin, who's speaking big truth to the world and is right about it 99% of the time, at least you feel, it's hard to find your own place inside of that. Yeah. What could I say or see that he hasn't already said or seen in that way? So I think there was always an unconscious limiter around me with that shadow that we talk about being in the shadow of our parents or the shadow of an older sibling sometimes. So that I think that really I had to grow up a lot, as people will see when they watch the documentary, if they haven't yet. There was some trauma in my childhood and I needed time to find my feet and find my way into the world. And that really did not happen until my 30s. And then I really didn't claim myself until after my mom died in 97. That was my mid-30s. So it's been this incremental expansion of my voice, my belief that I have the right to be here. And then, you know, both my parents were seekers always, like spiritual seekers. Obviously, my dad took a lot of acid. That was one of his ways of raising his consciousness. So that conversation, that what's the meaning of life conversation, was always in our family. And like things like synchronicities and things, we always talked about that kind of stuff. So there was like this openness to kind of the magic of life. And I was always, always fascinated with that. And so I did, you know, after my mom died, I really kind of came out as a, like, I'm a spiritual person. And I, you know, pursued Buddhism, Thich Nhat Hanh path.
Most beautiful man who's walked the earth. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. It's just, and he's grounded me so much in the last 9 months too, just listening to his stuff again. Yeah, that, and then really getting very interested in Jungian and post-Jungian depth psychology and the whole idea of archetypes and mythology and how psyche, the collective psyche versus the individual psyche, like really fascinated with that, and got to get my master's in that, which was fabulous. And that really shapes most of my thinking, those two things. And they help me make sense of the world in some ways. And my dad was always fascinated by that stuff too. He'd always ask me questions, you know, what are you learning? What is this? What is that? You know, so he was an absorber like I was too.
Yeah. I also want to just acknowledge, because you mentioned her a few times, your mom, just, you know, a lot of times you know about famous people, but you don't know about the people they're married to, and the way in which she supported him. And it's not just be like, oh, great. Yeah. Have a good show. No, like, you want to do what? I'm in. I'm going to help you. I'm going to open doors for you. Like, she was such a powerhouse. And to be a woman working in show business and to go through her own addiction and to get back on her feet and to then be such a catalyst for him. Like, what an incredibly divine pairing, right?
Yeah.
Like, the two of them got put together.
Yeah.
No matter what. And everybody has stuff that comes up in their marriage, but how they served each other. And then they would make someone so beautiful like you. And because you really have so much humility, which is very much a trip, right? Because the ego does a lot of interesting things when you're born into a famous family. And the second you came on, you just were so beautiful and generous. And I think that's such a testament to both of your parents. And like I said, the word before, the humanity of both of your parents.
Yeah. I feel so blessed to have both of them in my life. And really so happy my mom's story is out there, because she was a woman of a certain age and a certain time. You know, my parents were a little older than the younger kids in the 60s. They were the middle generation. They were, the, you know, my dad was 30 in 1967 and my mom was 30 in 1969. So they were in this interesting place. So my mother was half in that really traditional world and both of them were definitely counterculture people.
Oh, yeah.
And so to have that generation, that particular age of that woman get her story told and my mom in particular has been really important to me because people don't understand that my dad was a radical in a lot of ways and yet would not let my mother get a job when I was a little girl because he didn't want me being a latchkey kid like he was. You know, he was suddenly this traditional guy too. And it kind of crushed my mom and really confused her. And she had a big crisis because of it. And then she was already alcoholic. So it just added to it. But that struggle of that generation to find their footing, to find their voice, and then to find it in the shadow of someone, you know, like my dad, who rightfully so was big and had a very large spotlight on him.
Yeah. And then your mom, for anyone who hasn't seen the documentary, goes on to be one of the first people involved with HBO before HBO became,
yeah.
I mean, she was just so ahead of her time as a woman in that time. And also to bounce back and forth between living in one state of her life with being a mom, with going through an addiction, but finding her way out every single time back. I love that they put such a spotlight on her story. I want to tell Wayne actually that that was just whoever's was behind that. Like that gave so much. I was surprised, pleasantly surprised that she had such a big part of the movie and rightfully so. So we're going to move on more, you know, into like what you said happened for you mostly in your 30s and in 1997, as you said, after your mom passed and claiming yourself. But before we do, if we could just sort of pick one thing that you're hoping that by people watching this documentary, they will come to understand about your dad that they might not have understood. What do you think is one thing that this documentary leaves them knowing that sort of helps them really see who he was?
I think it really is his personal story, his own personal struggle at times with being a husband, being a father, being a son, and his struggle with his art, that everyone thinks he had this kind of career that just always kept going up. And he was always the guy. He was, you know, he and Pryor were always the two guys because my dad never spoke about his personal life in public on stage. He was not Richard Pryor. He would not unzip his life on stage. He never talked about his addiction. A little bit here and there he did, always joking, always very distanced from it. So for me, always it has been about, and part of my mission in life is to help people see that we can all take off our masks. We're all human and we're all just human beings trying to figure it out in the end. And it's never to take my dad off of his pedestal. It's really to rise people up basically to his level. Like we can all touch the gods and be human because it's through our humanity and through our obsessions and our curiosities is where we find our divinity in the end.
Absolutely.
So,
Absolutely.
So that's the, you know, the really the human man is the part that I think is so important. And to really understand too, that he wasn't angry. He was disappointed.
Yeah.
He was a brokenhearted human because there was so much potential with this species and so much potential in this country. And we've all just let ourselves be distracted by the next shiny object. And isn't that the story that all of the great prophets have been teaching us for 5,000 years?
Yeah. Yeah. There's this clip in the doc where Roseanne is talking to him.
Greatest clip ever.
It's so good. And she says to him, I'm on to you. You're not a cynic. You're a brokenhearted idealist. And he goes, yeah, not in that many words, but I have come to think that about myself. And it's so good that she got it. She like nails it. And I had seen him a few times. I was lucky enough to see him. And I saw him, must have been like 2003 or 2004 in LA. And he was so upset. He was in this place where he was just talking about what is going on in this world. And I was in tears because he was so upset.
Yeah.
And everyone was listening. And that was the good thing, is he had a captive audience. And at a certain point in the show, like, he stopped making jokes and he was just like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. And I remember walking out of there thinking, this man just used his whole platform to really sit and say, like, how not okay this is. Right. Yeah. And I'm like, who cares this much that they're like willing to spend an hour saying, no, 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 you're not hearing me. You're not getting it. And I thought, there's so much here. But when I saw the movie, it really clicked for me. Like, he was so disappointed because he believed so much in people and what we could be. And the fact that we weren't, it was so devastating to him because he was such a sensitive person. One more thing I want to ask you about this, and then we'll move on, is in terms of being, like you said, like, he had this ability to be a disruptor. And we live in a time where it's just so hard to say what you really think because people have one way that they have to hear it or say it. And so there's not a lot of discussion anymore. There's a lot of just like, this is what it is, or it's this way. And especially in comedy, it was funny when the documentary where he's like, I need to go to college campuses so I can actually say what I think. And it's like,
now it's like, no, you can't go to college campuses.
No, like, you can't say anything. Like, you're like, it's horrible. Like, people have no space for it. I'm just curious, like, of all the people to ask, like, what's your take on that? And how do you think we could maybe improve as a species with that?
It is the big question right now. You know, I went back to UCLA late when I was 25, and I was a communications major. And in 1990, I did a political correctness symposium, and my dad was on the panel.
1990. Oh my God.
That's 1990, amazing. We were discussing this on campuses. That's when it started showing up on campuses and in the world. So it's just an ever, you know, growing phenomena. You know, the way I have dealt with this myself is another thing I study is integral philosophy, the Ken Wilber stuff. And basically, it's helped me so much really understand that there's like three factions of worldview that are kind of duking it out right now. There's the traditional worldview, which is one country, one God, believes in their guns, believes in their Second Amendment, believes in their religion, conservatives. Then there's the modern thinkers who are more capitalists, market mentality, you know, innovation, science, reason on that level, you know, it's property over people kind of a stuff. And then there's the greenies. There's the green meme, which is all the postmoderns. Everyone's equal. Everyone needs to have a voice. You know, the most progressive, you know, everyone's got to have a pronoun. Everyone's got an identity. All that kind of stuff.
As you describe them all, I'm like, oh, as she keeps describing, it's like each one starts to feel uncomfortable because each one starts to feel
right.
Extreme.
Exactly. Because the thing about, and then there's this integral leap you make. This is the other part of it. And so with these three things, each one of them only have their own worldview and only believe that worldview is right.
That's the problem.
No one else could be right. And that's the problem. But the integral worldview sees that every single one has something to offer us.
Of course.
You have to have a certain amount of traditional law and order keep, you know, like there's values in that are so important. There's values in modern thinking, reason, science, all that kind of important, you know, and really also the green planet, people are equal, equity, everyone has a voice, everyone has an identity. All of them are important. They all have something to teach us.
Yeah.
So I think there's more and more of us who sit outside in this integral view, kind of watching these three, and we all tune up with some part of them. We all get it. And we are shredded apart because they're not getting it yet. And they're kind of running the machine of the culture, these three. And so this has helped me. I started studying this in about 2005. This has helped me make sense of it. Like my dad, who loved to step away from the species and kind of watch it. He was an integralist before that was even a thing. And he could see all of the factions fighting. And I think that's why every single one of these claim my father for something.
That's so funny.
So the traditionalists claim him for the anti-PC, the libertarian speech stance, the science atheists claim him for the science reasoning thing. And then the Greens, of course, claim him for the never punch down, always punch up. The system is rigged. You know, greed is bad. Capitalism is going to undo us. And so everyone has a stake in my dad. And then they all come at me and say, well, your dad would do this and your dad would do that. And I'm like,
no.
You know, yeah. So I've started talking about it in this way to get people to kind of understand
it. I love it. It makes so much more sense. We had Marianne Williamson on the show and she was saying something I love, which is like this, like, you know, let's say there's two camps of what she was talking about, you know, Democrats or Republicans, at least in one world where there's two. She said, it's not red and blue, it's purple. She goes, this country is all purple. It is. You know, there's only like fringes that are blue and red. The rest is purple, and we have to learn to be together, and we have to learn to say that most of the time we're really purple, because who on earth would be so only this or only that? Like, nobody is built that way.
And yet our social media and everything feeds the extremes, because the extremes always get the most attention.
It's exhausting.
It is. So we just all need to just have these kind of conversations over and over again. Let everyone know you're not alone. Yeah. You have all these people inside of you. You have all these worldviews inside of you, and, you know, and take the best and the richest of each and build a life on that.
Yeah, it's so true. I lived in Jerusalem after college for 3 years and, you know, just had the most incredible journey and met so many incredible Jews and Arabs and Christians and Armenians. And like, you know, and I lived in Spain for a semester, and I'm like, people around the world are so good and we have all so, so much in common. And then leadership around the world just usually doesn't represent the people. Just so weird. 'Cause you have like 7 or 8 billion people who mostly are the same. And then you have 300 humans who run the whole thing, who are egomaniacs, and they're the ones telling us who we are. And it's just like, clearly you don't represent us. Like, look what's happening with guns. Like, everyone in the country seems to be saying one thing and the leadership is like, no, sorry, can't do anything about that. We're like, okay. So it's time to wake up, and it's time to start talking about being integral and purple and all of the things that really ground us in like, okay, this feels true.
This conversation is so good. Before we keep going, we're going to thank our sponsor. I love that sound. That's the sound of another sale on Shopify. Shopify is the all-in-one commerce platform to start, run, and grow your business. Shopify believes in liberating commerce for all because, as we know from the show, entrepreneurship has the power to drive communities forward, and commerce can be a force for good. Supercharge your knowledge, your sales, and your success. For a free 14-day trial, go to shopify.com/dreamjob, all lowercase. Shopify is a platform designed for anyone to sell anywhere, giving you the resources once reserved for big business, customized for you with a great-looking online store that brings your idea to life and tools to find customers, drive sales, and manage your day-to-day. I love how Shopify makes it easy for anyone to make their ideas come to life and run their own thriving business. You don't even need any coding or design experience to build your online store, because they give you the knowledge, the confidence, and the resources to help you succeed. Shopify opens a portal to endless possibilities and powers millions of entrepreneurs from first sale to full scale. And every 28 seconds, a small business owner makes their first sale on Shopify. Plus, they have 24/7 support, so you're never alone. More than a store, Shopify grows with you. This is a possibility powered by Shopify. Go to shopify.com/dreamjob, all lowercase, for a free 14-day trial and get full access to Shopify's entire suite of features. Start selling on Shopify today. Go to shopify.com/dreamjob. Right now.
Those of you listening, so, you know, Kelly has gone on to not just be such a seeker, but she's been helping women through courses and coaching and helping people find their path. Let's talk about that, because I know so many of the women listening could benefit so much from what you do. How did you get into that? And what are you hoping to do with that work?
So when I came out of grad school, got my master's in counseling psychology with an emphasis on Jungian depth psychology, I knew I didn't want to become a therapist. I didn't want to be in the room. I didn't want to do that work. It was too triggering for me. So I got certified as a coach because I really wanted to be a meaningful conversation is just my jam. Like,
so good.
Whether it's on a podcast or with a client or on a panel, I don't care. I just want to be having meaningful conversations with people. It's just, it fills my life with everything. It is like the biggest non-negotiable value in my life. And so I started doing that a little bit. And then my dad died in 2008. And if you read my memoir, you will see that one of my dances with my dad was I was a personal storyteller. I was telling personal stories. I wanted to tell my life story after my mom died. And it made my dad uncomfortable. He was not of the Oprah generation. I was. And I was okay with it. Spalding Gray was my hero. Karen Finley was my hero. So when my dad died, I knew it was time for me to step on a stage and find my voice and a spotlight. And I did that from 2008 to about 2016, 2017. I had a solo show and then my memoir came out and I was out in the world and social media was a thing.
I love that you did that.
And just owned it. And I had some people saying to me, you know, is it weird? You know, you don't have to do this. You don't have to take care of your dad's legacy. You don't have to do all this kind of stuff. And I'm like, if I don't walk through this and own that I'm a Carlin and I'm a unique person and walk through the legacy and talk about my relationship with him, I will have pretend that it doesn't exist. Yeah. I can't do that. That's not who I am. So what happened then in like 2017 is I just hit one of those life phases where I was like, okay, what do you do once your dream comes true? Like having a memoir out, you know, with the real nice big publisher was my dream for 20 years. So what the hell do you do? And Gary Shandling had just died and he was my mentor. And I was like, Gary, where are you? Because Gary had refathered me since my dad died, all this kind of stuff. So I started to write a book about all this and I wanted to call it Untangling Daughterhood. And then a part of me, and I tried to work it. And a part of me was like, oh, I've just been George Carlin's daughter for like 8 years in public. I don't want to do that anymore. I need to find my individual self and my work in the world again. And so I pulled away from the book, but everything that I started to outline in the book, which was, how did I find my voice? How did I step into my spotlight? What did I have to untangle to do that? What happened was, totally unconsciously, is I hired a business coach and she said, you're a coach already. You've got all this training. Create a year-long program. Like, that's how you create a great stable business, is do a year-long program. Let's stabilize your finances, all this kind of stuff. I had to get really clear about my dependence on my father emotionally and financially my whole life. I had to do a lot of inner work around that. So just in the developing of that, I turned towards these great teachers that I'd had. Maureen Murdoch and The Heroine's Journey is a huge influence on my life. I studied with her at Pacifica when I got my grad stuff. And so I just started putting this program together to help women, mostly who are at a time in life where they've done it. They've either been the mom or they've been in the career long enough, or they've been in the thing and they've been the good girl with the pat on the head. They've done it the way the culture's wanted it for them to do it. And there's still a sense of lack of meaning or purpose, or even really knowing who they are, because they kind of put all of that in the basement at some point in order to comply, like we all do. And I just created this program, some content, some curriculum, some calls. And now I'm in my fourth year now. And I have a year-long program, Women on the Verge, that's shifting. That's going to be called something like On the Verge or You on the Verge, because for 4 years, men have been saying to me, please, we need this because the patriarchy is crumbling. So that's happening. I have a little 3-month version of it called True North. And I'm now like creating all this, I've created all this content. I'm now actually putting it out into the world in different forms. And it's just all kind of really happened organically. And I've pulled every aspect of everything I've ever learned, everything I'm fascinated by, everything I've lived through to make this journey happen for women or men to find their thread, their soul path, their thing that lights them up, while at the same time creating abundance for themselves, creating structure for themselves, creating, you know, whatever it is they want for themselves. And I'm shocked at what I've been doing the last 4 years. It's been incredible.
It is incredible. And I'm so glad that you're also including men on this journey down, because Justin Baldoni was here and I'm sure you know what the work he's doing with men and his new book, Man Enough. And it's all about, you know, really, what about masculinity can be positive and can be beautiful?
Yeah.
How can we reclaim it? And you were talking about women who are in that place where it's like, I've got the pat on the head, but I just don't feel fulfilled. Let's talk about that for a second.
Yep.
What does it require to step into authenticity, to step into our integrity with ourselves?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the first thing I always teach and talk about is turning toward ourselves, being willing to turn our back on the world. As women, we are shaped by our obligation to the world. The world expects us to turn towards it. And we naturally are engaged. We are connected, relationship-oriented beings. The feminine is. And that's for men too. It's for everyone in between, every spectrum and pronoun. We all have these two energies. But I think the culture really trains us in some ways to sacrifice turning towards ourselves or our ambition or our curiosity in service of the harmony of the space. And so the first thing I have women do and talk about, and sometimes they spend the whole first year with me just learning to turn towards themselves. So that's witnessing themselves through meditation, journaling, learning to connect to their intuition, their desire, what they actually want, and to be able to withstand the anxiety that comes up when we turn away from the roles and relationships that have fed our identity, that have given us success, that have given us meaning even. There's nothing wrong with being a mother. There's nothing wrong with being a career woman who didn't have kids, didn't have a family. None of that's wrong. It's just that we've only attached ourselves to that and our meaning and our identity. And really, I think what's calling us is this deeper thing that wants to be seen and heard. And because I've studied Jungian psychology and a lot of the work we do is with the deep imagination and the imaginal and dreams, I also bring women into relationship with their inner life, their inner fantasy, their inner dream life, inner allies, all the different parts of us and the voices within us, our ancestors. There's this kind of different realm that some people call it magical thinking. It's not. We have an imagination. Man, woman, human has been doing this since day one. It brings richness. And it's one of the ways I think that I'm different than most coaches. You know, most coaches, we have a lot of coaching training. We have a lot of ways of doing powerful questions, things like this. I bring them into these depth processes, active imagination, guided imagery, and bring that element into it to help them learn to have a relationship with their deeper, richer, vast inner self also. So that's the first thing, is that turning toward self and being willing to withstand the anxiety that you have to withstand when you turn away from the world.
It's so delicious and exciting. I'm like, I want to be a part of one of your programs because it's just so cool how you embody and explain what you just expressed. Let's talk about that for a second, because I've spoken now to hundreds of thousands of women who listen to the show and a few good guys too. And it almost feels as though that muscle of magical thinking, it's so magical because it feels so impossible. Like anything that you could possibly think of with your imagination, all of a sudden, if you're 2 seconds into that thought, you're like, I could never do that. That's completely impossible. And I don't feel like I'm good enough anyway. Even if somebody handed me my own memoir, like I don't even feel worthy of having my own memoir, but it also doesn't feel possible. So how can we learn to practice that muscle of our imagination? You know, I think of Walt Disney flying over swampland in Anaheim and going, "Do you see it? Look, look again." You know, I mean, it's like, is that magical? No, it's called having an imagination. It's called having vision, right?
It's exactly. It is visioning. Exactly. Yeah.
So how do we learn how to get back into use of that muscle of that part of our more expansive self when there's something in the subconscious BS belief system that's like, that's not even possible. Why would you even think that thought?
Yeah. So what I've created is, there's three particular skills that we need to practice in order to do this. One of which is to really get that we are in choice. We have a choice. we don't think we have a choice because that other voice comes walking in and says, well, that's stupid. Or that's the, it's always, and that's just the protector voice, right? The coaches call it saboteurs, gremlins. It's just a protector. And it came on board when we were about 4 or 5 years old. So we see it as part of integrating of who we are. It's built on a 4 or 5 year old's version of reality. Guess what? 4 year olds don't know reality. They are magical in their thinking in a lot of great ways. But when it comes to protection, they see the world in a very, very particular way. And it's very much confined about what I have to do to have daddy and mommy love me forever. So it's a protector voice. So we need to learn that we have real choice and that that protector voice does not get a say in that choice anymore. It just doesn't get a vote because it's overprotective. It's the ultimate helicopter parent is what okay. that protector voice is.
I'm like taking notes. I'm like, I have to take notes right now. Go ahead.
And so then the second skill is trust. You have to learn to trust your body, yourself. This is part of that relationship with your intuition and your inner life, your wishes, your desires, your imagination, but also trust that there is something bigger than your ego. And I don't care what you call it. My dad called it the big electron. You know, people in AA and 12 steps call it a higher power. Some people it's God. Some people it's the goddess, Gaia. Energy, the whatever it is for you, but there is something bigger than your ego. And it's your entire psyche, which about, you know, I don't know, 70, 80, 90% of it is unconscious. It's where all the magical visioning is happening. So trusting, you have to take a leap of faith into trusting something. And then the third thing is doing. And you have to do in order to learn what you're capable of, and that the world doesn't fall apart and the earth doesn't open if you make choices about what you really want and go for it. But you have to do it with an attitude of play. So the third skill is play. You have to be willing to improvise and be in the laboratory of life. And this is where a lot of women I work with are perfectionists. So the perfectionist walks in the room. I want to know what's going to happen beforehand. It's got to be perfect. So I'm all about lowering the bar and just throwing spaghetti on the wall. And in the end, it's all just information. So then you throw the spaghetti on the wall. Did it work? Did it feel right? Is it moving you towards what you want? It's just information. Yeah. Take the next step, play, choose, trust, play, choose, trust, play. And through that, and this is what I did in order to get on a stage. This is what I did to write my memoir. This is what I did to step out into the world as George Carlin's daughter, taking care of his legacy, all these things. This is what I did to create this business. I just trusted that there is some bigger conversation having me. I'm part of it. It, you know, it's having me. I'm not having it.
Yeah.
And through that, there's this, oh, I'm not in charge. Oh, I'm just here to shift energy. I'm just here to try things out. It's not the end of the world, because 4 or 5 year old inner protector thinks everything is going to be the end of the world if it doesn't go right.
I'm literally sitting here speechless because, Kelly, and I really hope you'll receive this, that your soul receives this, not even your ego, although your ego can receive it a little bit too. But we've had every good coach on this show and they're all amazing and I love them. And I'm so grateful to be mentored by so many of them. You're so good at this.
Thank you.
You're so good at it. And I'm sitting here just like dumbfounded because this is one of my favorite episodes we've ever done, because the beginning of the conversation is so juicy because obviously everybody knows who you are and who your family is. And so we have this like meaty conversation because they weren't just famous people. They were like, you know, your dad was somebody who had something to say, and we talk about that. And then there's this whole other thing that you decide to raise your hand to be a part of. How many people don't find it and don't do it because they don't know how to step out into, I have my own assignment. And guess what? So much of that is because the world doesn't require it of them. They say, oh, you're Prince Harry. Oh, you're Jim Henson's kid. Oh, whatever. Great. You're done. Don't do. And you said, no, I know that there's something I care about that I really want to do. And you're so good at it. And it takes so much humility, by the way, for your ego to go ahead and do anything, because the world sees you as royalty almost. So it's like,
yeah,
wait, she's a princess. So why is she doing anything? And honestly, like, you could have lived on that royalty because you already had a seat at that table. And you're like,
yeah,
I'm coming over to everyone's table. And I'm just like, and you're so good at it. So now to go back to, I just had to share that with you. To go back to these pieces, I'm taking notes. I love this, that the four-year-old self, right, has a view of reality. I love what you said, because we want to be loved by our parents. So, oh my gosh, that's so fascinating. And then this idea, I circled it as I, boy, do I want to learn this. You said, learning to trust yourself, learning to trust your body, learning to trust your wishes. I mean, I've never heard anyone say that. And it's so key, right? It's like,
it's
why
everything.
Don't we know how to trust ourselves? Like, if you have a thought, why on earth did you put that on the shelf for 20 years? That was your intuition. So how do we that?
You know, Kathy, I just want to talk about the people who have influenced our culture. They know how to trust themselves from day one. They got something that the rest of us didn't get. And I'll use my father as a great example of that. He trusted something in himself. He was like 10 years old on a stoop, doing jokes, mimicking the priests and the teachers. He was winning the drama award at summer camp. You know, he trusted himself. He trusted something that he had, and he kept seeing. And because he would do, he would get the feedback. So then the trust grows.
I see.
This is in tune with what I feel and see. That's why the doing part is so important, because in a vacuum, we can't learn to trust in a vacuum. When we're hiding in our house, this is the non-trust, because trust has to do with relationship. Relationship with speaking your truth to a partner, speaking a truth to a client, speaking a truth to the audience. There's a trust that has to be willing to be sussed out. And sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes we put it out there and it's not the right audience, or I haven't found the right way to say it yet, or I'm in the wrong family. You know, people grow up and they feel like they're in the wrong family, you know, and they go but it's this thing. So when you look at these people who have influenced you in your life and who are heroes for you, you know, Deepak and Marianne, and I think of Oprah, I think of Elizabeth Gilbert, I think of like all these people out there having these big, big conversations. They trust something. Mm-hmm. And the only reason they trust it is because they had to take a risk at some point to see if what their insides were feeling was what the world needed.
Yeah.
And so it's just about experimenting with that to find the conversation you're here to have. It could be a small one. It could be a big one. You don't have to be Oprah. You could be the person who like happens to get the kids in the neighborhood and, you know, teaches them to garden because you love plants and you just know how to talk to 10-year-olds. You know, it's like, who knows? Yeah.
It's interesting because it goes back to that overprotector, like you said, because my friend Mark Grove said to me, all day long, we have two choices, authenticity or belonging. And 9 times out of 10, we choose belonging. So then he said, but who do you really belong to? Because now you don't belong to yourself. So how could you belong to anyone else? And I know for myself, I grew up in a house where there was a lot of, there was violence, there was alcohol, my parents got divorced. There was a lot of things going on around me. And my best coping strategy was to make sure everybody was okay. And so I am such a good pleaser. I am amazing at it. I can morph into being anything for anyone.
Yep. I know your path, girl. I've walked it and lived it too. I get it. This word belonging is huge, because ultimately we don't have to choose between the two. Because when you turn towards yourself, learn to trust, learn to choose, learn to play, learn to witness yourself, learn to connect, and learn to connect to the depths of yourself. And part of that is this deep imagination work that I do in a way. Part of the access to belonging is to follow your longing. And when you follow you follow your longing, really follow it with the choice, trust, and play, you will belong to yourself. You will feel like you've connected to your birthright, and you will feel like you are talking to the cosmos, like you are connected to every layer of the self, physical, spiritual, you know, all the different selves. Mm-hmm. This is what I've been studying, especially the last 4 years through this, you know, high-end integrated depth psychology stuff that I've been working on. And it's incredible.
Yeah.
And I love that you brought up that word, because it is the magic portal to all of this.
I love it too. And I love what you just said. If you follow the longing, you're going to find your way to the belonging. It's so gorgeous. And I think about Daniel Pink has been here a couple of times and recently wrote a book on regrets, and Bronnie Ware was here and she wrote a book on the 5 biggest regrets of the dying. And both of them, their research showed very similar things, that the main thing that people say that they're regretful of in the end of their days is not living life on their terms. Like all these things that never materialized. And I think about recently, Ethan Hawke a couple of years ago did this beautiful TED talk on creativity. And in the middle of it, he talked about his grandmother who left her memoir. And in this memoir, maybe it was, let's say, I don't know, 50 pages. He said, and I don't remember the exact number, but the point is the same. He goes, of the 50 pages, she wrote 11 pages on one summer where she made costumes at a theater. Mm. And he goes, this is a woman who had this many children, lived through 2 world wars, had 2 husbands, had gone through this, gone through that, 11 pages on costumes, one summer where she sewed costumes. And I think about that and how many people I know are like, yeah, I'd love to make those costumes. Mm. I've always wanted to make those costumes, but it just wasn't a way to make them. And then you get to 98 and you go, God, I wish I would have made those costumes.
Yes.
Right. And so I love that this is like what you're zeroing in on, because we can't have this anymore, Kelly. We can't have a society. It's no wonder. I mean, even what you spoke about before with the purple people, right? The people who are not purple, right? Why are we so obsessed with what's going on in the government anyway? It's like, we're not busy belonging to ourselves. So it's like, let's just get on a chat room and argue with each other. Like, why is that even so interesting? It's not that interesting anyway. It's like, be more interesting to see everybody on the block. Just use your own hands and make the community shine by being yourself.
Well, and I think, you know, what happened is at some point we, you know, we did the spirit mind split, you know, the soul, the physical and the non-physical split that happened, you know, through the age of enlightenment, which thank God, you know, we have medicine, we have, you know, we have this technology, it's amazing. But what we've forgotten is that what really makes us alive and really what brings meaning to our life is following this longing. And we've been convinced that the machinations of government and business and commerce, as much as that's important to keep like goods flowing and all of us to have food and shelter, which is ultimately what it's all about, in, you know, from the beginning, food and shelter, that's really all we needed. But that we become obsessed with the machinations of it, thinking that we have some power to change it, when we know at this point, we don't. The institutions have been dying for 60 years. It's what the counterculture was about in the 60s. Now they're in like some sort of death knell. And now we have the planet condition the way it is. And I think the only way we're going to get through it as a species is to get that. Of course, we're always going to have to come together as a collective to decide how these things are done and how we share things in some way. But the meaning of life, the quality of life, happens here in our bodies every day with what we're doing with our hands and our lives with each other.
It's so gorgeous. And the last thing I want to ask you as we're wrapping up is, you also said something which feels a little bit revolutionary, because as you were sharing what it is that you do, what you help people to do, is you also said, and also abundance, helping people to step into that. And that's interesting, because people who know your dad and maybe would kind of like decide who you are, a lot of times people have this thought that you could either be a really good person and you could have dreams and you could want to make costumes, but that person wouldn't also be available to make a lot of money, because people who make money are inherently evil. So therefore, you shouldn't be available for abundance, because that just puts you right back into this place where you won't belong to anyone good. And yeah. I don't agree with that at all. And I heard you say that and I was like, so how do you reconcile that you could actually be available to have plenty of food and water and even extra to give away and still be a person with integrity?
Yeah, Kathy, this is something I've had to dismantle the last 4 years working with an incredible business coach who works on abundant stuff. And you know, because my dad was pretty much like an anti-capitalist in many ways.
That's why I'm asking. And
money is evil. It only equals greed. And I have had to come to terms with that to really understand. And this is a phrase that my business coach taught me, which is build a better business, build a better you, build a better business, build a better world. It's the oxygen mask metaphor. I can't help you if I don't have enough oxygen. I have to have enough oxygen. I don't need to be a billionaire. I do not understand the billionaire mentality. Like, those people have enough money for a gazillion lifetimes. And unless they're really using it to save the planet, I don't freaking get it. So, you know, hoarding is not okay. Nothing in nature hoards. Like, let's just look at nature. I need my thing. I have abundance. We have safety. We have security. And now the energy flows out and everything like that. So we have to stop making money bad, wealth bad, abundance bad, shadow. It becomes shadow. It runs your life either way. You're either running towards it all the time or running away from it. How about we start to see it as an exchange? And I have found the more that I've stepped into being able to ask for a certain level of value for my program, you know, calling people forth into their value, the more I learn to do that, the more I receive, and the more I get to build a company where more people are being fed, their families are being taken care of, and I get to have a bigger impact because I get to be more well known about it or more trusted or whatever that thing is. And I get to reach more people, which means all those people that I've worked with are going out and doing that too in their own ways, in their own lives.
Exactly.
So it really is this thing where we have to get out of the black and white thinking around everything.
Oh yeah.
You know, so that's the bottom line with it. And that's the thing about abundance and wealth and money is we have a lot of growing up in this country to do around this issue, as we clearly can see.
Yeah. And I love the quote from Mother Teresa herself, which is, it takes a checkbook to change the world. Mm-hmm. And it's great because you think about how many people have their names on buildings of hospitals and museums and theaters because they care about making the world more enriched for other people. And, you know, the Talmud has a great idea of how this works, where it says that like money is like rain falling on a garden. So if you're inherently out of integrity, you're a weed, more of that grows. But if you have integrity and you're like roses and hydrangeas and money falls into your ecosystem, you're going to grow that. Like, that's what's going to grow. Like, money is not the decider. We can think of people right now in our lives. We'll name them. No, I'm just kidding. But we can both think of people who have a lot of money who are terrible. And we can think of people who have a lot of money who are the reason why so many good things have happened. And the same thing with poor people. You can think of people who have very little who are very generous and very little who are terrible. Right? Not the money.
Yeah. And if you think of it as currency, it's all it is currency. And what is the root of currency? The root of the word is current, is flow. So it's just a way of flowing energy. Yeah. It's flow. It's movement in the end. So money happens to be currency in capitalistic society. There's many different ways to have currency. Right now, we're living, you know, it's late capitalism, but we're here still. It's still about the almighty dollar.
I never heard that before, the word current. At first I was like, why is it current, like modern? And she's like, no, like a current, like a river. And when Barbara Corcoran was here, and she's a billionaire. She said, money is like blood in the body. It has to keep moving. So she right. said, as soon as money is coming in, I've already earmarked it for something. I'm already buying a building. I'm already hiring 3 more people. I'm already doing this. I'm already doing that. And then see a woman, spitfire billionaire like her, who is just like, I came from 11 kids, like never went to college. It's like, hell yes. You know, but she said something that's similar to that. So I love that you're doing this work. Where can people find you? Where can they sign up for one of your programs? Where can they watch the, and let them know where they can watch the documentary that came out.
So the documentary is on HBO Max and HBO. It's called George Carlin's American Dream. you can find me at my website, the Kelly Carlin site. And you'll sign up for my mailing list right away. If you would, I do something called Monday Musings. It'll land in your inbox. It's a little quote or poem. And then I ask a powerful question for the week. If you're interested in particular in Women on the Verge, I have a landing page for that. And it's womenonthevergecoaching.com. And that is by application and usually a conversation with me. I have a new course that'll be starting in September. I just finished it, the first run of it. It's called True North. It's for men and women. It's a 3-month course where I help you find, turn toward self. You learn about some of these skills. We practice them. It's kind of a quick learning of all of it, but there's some time to work it, work the material. And then there's always a chance to work with us more after the course. So that'll be happening in September again. And I'm, you know, starting to write again. I'm probably going to move back into my podcasting space, which is Waking from the American Dream. And the reason I call it that is because my dad's line, which is part of the documentary, which is, you know, it's called the American Dream because you have to be asleep to believe in it. And yet there are ideals and there are things about the American Dream and the whole concept of waking up into whether it's enlightenment or waking your own powers up, or waking into integral thinking. There's something beyond the old version of the American Dream. And so that's why I called the podcast Waking from the American Dream. Haven't done it in a few years. I'm going to start it up again. But there's some great episodes. Marianne Williamson's been on mine also. Gary Shandling, some Buddhists, all sorts of amazing people. So you can find me. And then I'm on Twitter. I hang on Twitter. That's my space. Kelly_Carlin. Come hang out with me on Twitter. I stay away from the politics for the most part, unless it's really pissing me off. But I try to like kind of uplift and have interesting conversations over there.
You are uplifting and everything you say is interesting. And I'm so glad that you came through. We will put links to all of that.
Thank you.
In the show notes. It was such an absolute delight to hang out with you. I really hope that our paths will cross again.
Let's make it happen, Kathy. Let's just say it will. And yeah, let's jump into something. Let's create some abundant magic out in the world.
Oh, it's so cool. You're so gifted. And I feel like your parents are just right there cheering you on, just like from the other side, just so proud of you for taking every good thing about them and then adding this like extra. You're just doing them so proud.
You're going to make me cry, Kathy.
But it's really true.
Thank you.
It's really, really beautiful.
Thank you.
All right. Have a gorgeous day. I've kept you long enough. To be continued.
It was just so fun talking with Kelly. I just love her. Just right away. Just want to be her friend. Here are the takeaways. 1, we can all take off our masks. We're all just humans trying to figure it out in the end. It's through our humanity, obsessions, and curiosities where we find our divinity. 2, turn towards yourself. Witness yourself. 3, choose, trust, play. 4, be willing to improvise, to be in the laboratory of life, to throw spaghetti at the wall. In the end, it's all just information towards the next step. 5, when you follow your longing, you will belong to yourself. 6, we're not in charge. We're just here to shift energy and try things out. Experiment, find the conversation you're here to have. 7, build a better business, build a better you. Build a better business, build a better world. And 8, money is just an exchange of currency. It's a current, a flow of energy. The more you receive, the more you can make a bigger impact. Thank you so much for listening. I know that you've got so much going on, and now it's the summer and people are traveling and kids got camp and they've got places to be, and there's just so much, and I so appreciate you. If you want to support this show, the very best thing you can do is subscribe and review the show. and share it. Maybe you can email this link to a friend or text it to somebody or post it on your Instagram and tag me at Kathy.Heller. And you can also tag Kelly. She's at Kelly Carlin is here. I'm sure she would love to see that you guys found this conversation touching. And don't forget, we're doing a retreat in Malibu, August 1st through the 3rd. You can sign up at kathyheller.com/retreat. It's going to be so good. I cannot wait to have that time together. And for those of you who want to be in my mastermind, that is actually starting in just about 2 weeks. It's a 6-month program. It is the highest level program that we offer. We've had about 400 people apply. We've only taken a small, small fraction of that. And we've only offered spots to a very small fraction of that group. And we have a few spots left. So if you would like to apply, you can book a call at kathyheller.com/mastermind, fill out an application, book a call. And then actually you get to come not only to the retreat in Malibu, which is included, but you also get an exclusive mastermind retreat just for the retreat women, which is going to be in November in South Florida, which will be beautiful. So if you want to get in on that, you can go to kathyheller.com/mastermind. I love you so much. I'll leave you with a song of mine, and I'll talk to you on Thursday.